Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally. Today we have a fun program lined up for you. Mr. Natural Olympia, John Hansen. John has just a plethora of information about the history of our sport, some really awesome stories, and he's here today to talk about his new book and share with us some stories. Not only do I have John, but I have my partner from Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, VJ Puri. VJ is here because, well, he himself is quite the historian of bodybuilding, and I thought it would be fun to just kind of turn these two guys loose together. So I take more of a back seat, and not only that, VJ is also going to edit this particular interview. He had some fun stuff he wanted to do with it, so all credit goes to VJ for this episode, and I was happy just to be a part of it. Hey guys, not only do we have an episode of Advices this week, we got a whole bunch of stuff. Monday, you heard Beyond Driven, David Johnston's show, and he brings on IFBB Pro Jamie Pinder. It's a really cool interview, and she has some really interesting perspectives. So if you haven't listened yet, check that show out. On Wednesday, we have Clinical Muscle with Dr. Ogden and Dr. VJ Puri again on the mic. Then Thursday, we have Muscle Minds, as always, featuring Dr. Scott Stevenson and Jordan Peters. Friday, we have a new Strength Depositions with Chuck Zarowski. Haven't heard from him in a while. Well, he's back. Not only that, but on Friday, it's also Bodybuilding Nerds Radio Day. So go to bodybuildingnerds.com on Fridays or search iTunes and Stitcher, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, and you can get in on all the fun of our show there. Now that I am back from contest prep, all the synapses and dendrites are firing electricity back and forth, I think there's going to be a whole lot more podcasting. So stay tuned for a bunch of new cool stuff coming from the Advices Radio Network. Here we go. Welcome to Advices Radio. This is episode number 50, and today we are going to do something a little bit different for all you Bodybuilding Nerds fans out there. I have with me my partner from Bodybuilding Nerds and the 0.5 doctors of Clinical Muscle, VJ Puri. What's up, Doc? How you doing?
Hello, hello. I'm very excited to be here today. We have, I think this is going to be a very fun show, at least for me. For me, personally.
For me, too. I think all the Bodybuilding Nerds fans know who John Hansen is, Mr. Natural Olympia. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about his program, Legends of Bodybuilding, for, you know, since it started now. We discovered that show just about two episodes in, and instantly both of us fell in love with it. You know, he talks a lot about the golden era of bodybuilding, and then in through the 80s and 90s now, and it's all stuff that we kind of grew up on, you know, the people that we kind of fell in love with in bodybuilding. And I think for both of us, it takes us back to that place, you know, where we first discovered the sport and fell in love with it. So John has this new book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, and we wanted to have him on to talk a little bit about that and then just kind of get to know who John is a little bit, because we hear him interview a lot of people, but we wanted to kind of find out a little bit more about John. So, hey, John, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
So I have to tell you, now I know VJ has looked up to you for a long time.
Very much so.
VJ, how long have you competed for?
I started competing in 98 is when I started competing, and then I competed until 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you decided to stay natural that entire
Correct.
Time.
Yeah.
You competed, you know, in a lot of natural shows and open shows, you know, against the bigger guys. But I think you hung with them pretty well. Now, you didn't quite make it to turning pro. I know you're really humble about your stories, but you came pretty damn close on more than one occasion. So I can totally see, you know, why you look up to John. And I kind of want to just turn this show over to you. I feel like
like, you'll be a better host at this than me because you've been following him so much more closely than I have. And let me just give it to you, man. Take the mic.
We can both drive this ship. No problem. I think we have lots to ask John here. And like you had said, you know, John has always been a huge influence to me. I remember seeing pictures of John in when I first picked up, you know, muscle magazines. He was just a young man at the time, but I remember looking at him and, you know, natural Mr. Universe, you know, two-time natural Mr. Universe, you know, natural Mr. Olympia. I didn't even know there was such a thing. You know what I mean? So that's what kind of got the gears turning in my head. I'm like, wow, man, this guy's doing it naturally. Look how fucking awesome he looks. Yeah. And I was just like, well, if he can do it, maybe there's a shot for me. Not to compare myself to John. Okay. Dude is legendary. I'm just saying he inspired me to carry on in that fashion. So yeah, definitely. It was he's been a big influence to me, and now we get a chance to talk to him today, man. So John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I have been listening to your show also, you know, since you guys were giving me shout outs, and I appreciate that for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So thanks for helping to support my show as well. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, one thing I want to say just out the gate is that you've been super prolific with the amount of material you've been putting out for that show. And then not only that, but you've been doing podcasts before this. You've got other interviews on your website. You're nonstop, man. How do you find the time of day to do all this, plus still train and get your nutrition in and, you know, live your life?
Yeah, well, you guys know what it's like, right? You run a few podcasts yourself. You just have to be organized. And like today, after I talk to you guys, I'm going to go out to Largo, Florida, and I'm going to talk to Eddie Robinson. So that's
going
to
be cool.
I'm going to do a bigger interview with him. Yeah. And usually I don't do them in person. I usually do it over, like I was saying, over the phone or Skype. So this will be cool because I'm going to go to his gym and do it in person. So he's had a great career, and he was a great bodybuilder back in the day. So it'll be interesting to talk to him. And then, I got, I think I'm going to talk to Mike Christian later this week for the 1990 series that we're doing right now on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I'm also supposed to talk to Peter McGuff later today, which I'm excited about.
Interesting. What do you guys?
Yeah, he's had some health problems lately. So he's, waited a few weeks to talk to me. And Peter's been around longer than me. You know, he was around in the 1970s over in England. He had his own magazine out there. And then, of course, he worked for Joe Weider's magazine for many, many years. And I think he worked for Robert Kennedy's magazine for a little bit until Robert Kennedy passed away. So, he's going to be great to talk to, too, especially about the 1990 Olympia, because Peter wrote a 10,000-word article about the 1990 Mr. Olympia. And if you've ever written an article, I mean, 3,000 is a long article. So he had so much to say about that contest, and he never published it. They never put it in the magazine.
Oh, wow.
I guess it was too long. So he's definitely someone I wanted to talk to about that contest, you know.
Did you get a chance to read that article, John?
No, I'm hoping he lets me read it.
Okay, because yeah, I'm interested to know what his overall thoughts were about that Olympia. It sounds like he wasn't real happy, you know.
Yeah, he had a lot to say for sure. Yeah.
And so for our listeners out there, too, what John and VJ are talking about is that 1990 Olympia, they decided to do drug testing. And John has been talking about this with various different people. I just came back from competing this weekend out in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It was a two-hour drive. It was perfect timing to listen to your interview with Sean Ray. You know, everybody, and VJ, you had said this to me last week, that everybody always kind of gives Sean Ray crap. I'll tell you what, man, you know, and part of that is because of how outspoken he is. I loved that interview.
Me
I thought
too.
That was such a good program. And especially that end piece. I had never heard the conversation that you guys, that recording conversation. Who was that with?
D'Amelia.
Wayne
D'Amelia.
That was at the 2001 Mr. Olympia press conference. Mm-hmm. And back then they just had everybody on a long table. And everybody wore suits and stuff. You know, they wore whatever they wanted to wear. And Wayne D'Amelia was basically taking questions from the audience. And somebody asked about seeing the score sheets for the Mr. Olympia. And he said, oh, yeah, the competitors can see them whenever they want. And John Ray goes, wait a minute. I goes, because at that point he was in the Mr. Olympia like 13 years.
Yeah.
And he goes, I've never seen a score sheet, you know, where each judge shows exactly what they're putting on the score sheet, what they used to have in the back in the old days. Like when I did that show about the 1981 Mr. Olympia, we did one show where we analyzed every judge's scores.
Yeah, that's right.
And every round. And that was great. And I loved when they IFBB used to do that, because even a controversial show like the 80 Olympia or the 81 Olympia, they were totally transparent. They would put the score sheets in the magazine so everybody could see them.
And you
so
know what,
one
too?
Judge was way off, you know, you were able to see that.
After you guys had gone through all of that too, it made a lot more sense to us as to how right. things ended up the way it did.
Yeah, exactly. I think the failing of that was the point system instead of using the placement system. And the judges were just awarding too many 20 points or 19 points to bodybuilders that should have been placed lower. Yeah. And I think that was the big problem with that. You know, the way that 1980 and 81 Olympia were judged, I think that's why Arnold and Franco were able to win both of those shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone thought that, you know, Weider was you know, handpicking these judges and stuff. And I don't necessarily, yeah. you know, think that was the case. Because I think at one of the Olympia, I think it was the 80 Olympia in Sydney, Weider was like visibly upset. I don't know if it was acting or whatever, but that's what everyone was saying, that he was visibly upset when Arnold actually won the show. And he walked out. He stormed out of the room. I don't know if that's true or not. I can't confirm or anything. But so that kind of tells you that, you know, it wasn't all Weider's. He wasn't a puppet master like people like tend to think that he was. You know, he was a puppet master in other ways and fashions, but not with the Olympia.
Yeah, I think it's easy just to say, oh, well, it was fixed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how do you really fix a contest? Are you going to tell all seven judges how they have to vote?
Yeah.
I mean, someone's going to spill the beans later on, you know. I mean, sooner or later, someone's going to come out and say, oh, yeah, they fixed it for us. But, you know, so I think it was just picking the wrong judges. Like when I talked with Roger Schwab, he said they wanted an international panel. So they picked, I think they had a lady from Japan that really wasn't used to this level of competition. Yeah. She didn't know how to judge those competitors, you know, because it's different when you judge even a national level show in Japan and then you go to the Mr. Olympia and you're seeing the best in the world. It just blows you away. You know, you don't know how to judge those people, you know.
Sure. Scott, we failed to introduce John. We were just so excited to get him talking that we forgot to have John give us any background. So, John, give us a little bit of background, because, like I said, we know everything about you. A lot of our listeners, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, know a lot about you because there's a lot of bodybuilding historians that like to listen. But also, you know, on Advices Radio Network, it's, you know, there's potentially people who don't know who the natural Mr. Olympia is. So just give us a, you've got such a long career, but I hate to tell you to give us the cliff notes, but just kind of give us an introduction to what's, you know, your bodybuilding career here.
Okay. Well, I started bodybuilding in 1977 when I was 14 years old. And right before I started high school, and my goal from the very beginning was, you know, I wanted to win Mr. Universe and then be featured in the magazines, especially Joe Weider's magazine, because I thought that was the best. You know, that was the most exciting magazine.
Of course.
And I just jumped in, you know, head first. I didn't know what I was really getting into. I didn't know anything about bodybuilding. I didn't know anything about the organizations or my genetics or drugs or anything. And I just decided I wanted to win Mr. Universe one day. So I started competing at 16 in the teenage shows. And I competed in 10 teenage shows from 16 to 19 years old. And then I spent a couple of years bulking up, and I bulked up to 230 pounds, which was almost 100 pounds more than when I started bodybuilding, because I was 135 when I started. And then from there, I started competing in NPC shows, because the NPC had actually just started a couple of years before that. And I was trying to work my way up the ladder, and I did pretty good in state-level shows. I won the Illinois State. I won the Mid-America, which was held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And then I won the Illinois Cup, but I couldn't do well on the national level. And I think it was because, you know, the drugs were getting more and more pervasive and people were taking more and more. So I had to make a decision on whether I wanted to go that route or not. And I said no. So I was actually going to quit bodybuilding. And then right around that time, which was the early 90s, that's when the natural competitions were really getting more popular.
Yeah.
Because back when I started, there were no natural competitions. You never even heard the term natural bodybuilding.
Right.
So then I started competing in the natural shows. And, after my first year of competing in the natural shows, I found out there was a contest called the Natural Mr. Universe, which was a different organization. It wasn't the NPC. It was called the ABA.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
Mostly out west in California.
That's right.
So I went out there and in 1992, and I won that contest. And then I won it again in 96. And then in 98, they had the Natural Olympia, which was the first year they had that. So I went into that in Greece, and I won that the first year they had it. And then I continued competing in bodybuilding for a while till I think 2004, I think. And then I stopped. I was 41 when I stopped. And I was working for Ironman magazine. I wrote a column for them for like 14 mm-hmm. years. And I wrote my own book called Natural Bodybuilding, which was published by Human Kinetics. And then I was just doing personal training. And then I started promoting shows, I think in 2007 in Chicago mm-hmm. through the ABA. And I started doing two shows a year with them, the Natural Illinois and the Natural North America. So I did that for a while. And then I moved to Florida in 2010. And I stopped doing the shows in Illinois, I think, around 2013. And then I started promoting a show out here for the MPC in Tampa in 2014. And I did that. And then I started the Bodybuilding Legends podcast this year. And I started doing interviews with the Bodybuilding Legends a couple years ago on my website. I have a website for it now. Before, I was doing it on a website called Florida Physique, where I was covering all the Florida shows.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. And the Legends interviews were just a part of that website. But now I started my own website called BodybuildingLegendsShow.com, and we have all the interviews on there, all the video interviews on there. And then we also started the Bodybuilding Legends podcast this year.
Yeah, and
that's about it.
That's a hell of a nutshell, you man. That's great. Scott, I remember. Now you said you had worked for the Ironman magazine. Is that right, John?
Yeah. When John Bailey called it.
Because I used to collect those in the early 90s. I could not wait for that magazine to come out. It was my favorite one. It was Flex Muscle Fitness, but Ironman was that was my favorite one, because there was always like probably 50 pages of like pretty much naked women, you know what I mean? And then that was and they were all fitness women at the time, and never seen anything like it before. He was like, "What was what?" Like,
yeah, right,
I was like
right.
a 13-year-old kid, you know. So, but I remember looking at a picture of John, Natural Universe, I think it was, and it was Natural Mission Olympia, I think. But he was doing a front double bicep, and I was just like, Jesus Christ, this guy's natural. I couldn't believe it. It was just like, wow, I just never seen anything like it. And he had bicep peaks like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, or Boyer Co. And I was just like, man, this guy is right. huge influence to me. And then I turned the page, and on the next page, there's this beautiful picture of Mike O'Hearn Titan from Gladiators, the American Gladiators. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him, and he had a natural title too, right? Hmm. And I'm looking at him, and I was just like, wow, man, he looks just so good. And then I was just like, you know what? This guy, he's too good looking. Like there's it's too much. You know what I mean? It's like I turned the page back over to John. And I was like, that's the guy. This is the guy I gotta
go
at.
Not as good looking.
I was like, that shit. That other shit is just unattainable. It's like almost alien how good looking that guy. Forget it. No, I can't. I can't even go that way. But so I remember those magazines, and that was the start of a big influence on me. So. You said you didn't know much about bodybuilding at the time. You just know you wanted to be a Mr. Universe. When you first got into training, what were like the first body parts to kind of explode? I'm guessing pecs and biceps, but I just want to know like genetic potential, how you kind of realize your genetic potential. Like, holy shit, I can do this.
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, a lot of people talk about genetics and they don't really analyze what genetics are.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was 14 and I would read these magazines, I was like, oh, my God, I'm never going to look like these guys. They look like they're from another planet. I just couldn't imagine my body ever developing to look like that.
Sure. Right.
And I remember there was an article in Muscle Builder right when I started, and it totally deflated me, because I think it was written by Bill Weider, and he talked about genetics. And he broke it down and he said, okay, let's say we have 100,000 guys who start working out. What are the chances of any of them making it to the Mr. Olympia stage? And then he said, okay, well, and then he broke it down. It was basically, he started eliminating people by genetics.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, out of those 100,000, there's only going to be a small percentage that are going to have the genetics to get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of those that have the genetics, how many are going to really want to do it? And how many are going to have the mental strength to be able to keep going and realize their potential. Mm-hmm. So he was basically saying it was like one out of 50,000 or one out of 100,000. And I was like, oh, well, I'm screwed. I'm skinny. I'm a skinny kid. I'm not naturally big. And I remember there was two kids in my high school. The high school I went to was weird. The freshman class went to one high school, which is a smaller high school. And then the sophomore, junior, and senior students, they went to another high school. So the high school I went to for my freshman year, it was just freshmen. And there was two kids in my freshman class that were really developed for 14 years old. Mm-hmm. One of them's name was Ricky Cruz, and he was like, he had long hair, he smoked pot, and he had like a real hot-looking blonde girlfriend. He was real cool. But he was like really developed, and he was really ripped. And I'm like, man, this guy doesn't even take it seriously. He's like smoking pot, he's partying, you know, how does he have a body like this?
And he's a white guy,
huh?
Kid
was named, yeah, he's a white guy. And there was another kid named Greg, and he was real bulky and big, and he would eat junk food all the time, and I was real strict, and I'm like, wow. And after I read that article, I said, well, these guys got the genetic, I don't. So I was really negative. I remember my first year of training, I was really negative. And then the next summer when I turned 15, I was out of school for 3 months, and I read another article by Arnold, and he was talking about the power of the mind. And he said there was a lot of people who, when they start bodybuilding, they don't look like they're going to be good bodybuilders, but they eventually turn into, and he mentioned Franco and Frank Zane.
Mm-hmm.
He said if you would have seen Franco when he started, he said Franco was real skinny, he had bow legs. You would never thought this guy could ever be a bodybuilder. Now he's Mr. Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Frank Zane. He was very skinny. He didn't look like he had the genetics to, you know, go anywhere. And now he's, you know, he became three-time Mr. Olympia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that totally changed my attitude, and I started thinking more positive. And we took some pictures. My brother took some pictures of me when I was 15. So this was after 1 year of training, and I was about 155 pounds. And when I looked at me doing all the poses, I could see I had what I called long-term genetics. I had the muscle shape. I didn't have the size yet. I was only 150 pounds. But I could see I had a peak on my bicep.
Mm-hmm.
I could see my lats were attached very low. I could see that my pecs were attached low and wide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just had to fill it all up, you know. I had weak body parts. My legs were real skinny. My triceps weren't as good as my biceps. My shoulders, I had nothing. They just went straight down.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to work on a lot of things, but I could see that I had the overall structure, and I had the shape. I just had to fill it out with muscles, which was going to take time. So that's a good question about genetics. You have to look at different aspects of genetics. You have to look at your structure, your muscle shape, not just how fast you grow muscle. That's one aspect of it. But the other aspect is, you know, like Frank Zane had long-term genetics. He had good muscle shape, obviously, and he had a good symmetry and good structure, but it just took him a long time to develop that physique to where, you know, he became Mr. Olympia.
Sure. Now, with your genetically, in the vein of genetics, where did you find that you excelled at certain compound lifts? Because I assume that, you know, you were all compound lifts back then when you were starting. You weren't, you know, training with a bunch of machines and stuff, right?
Yeah, the first 2 years, actually, I worked out at home because I didn't have a driver's license, and there was no gyms around back then. So I think the closest gym to me was about 8 miles away. So I couldn't get there. I was going to ask my parents to drive me every day, you know. So I just set up a room in the back of our house, and I was just lifting at home. And when you were asking me about which body parts responded, I remember I was doing chin-ups in the doorway. They had one of those chin-up bars that you screwed into the doorway,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So every time I read the magazines, they said everybody was doing wide-grip chin-ups. Arnold was doing wide-grip chin-ups. Robbie Robinson was doing wide-grip chin-ups. So I told my dad, I said, I can't do wide grip chin-ups because I can only get my hands so far. My elbows are hitting the door frame before I can even pull myself up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So my dad worked on a dock. He drove a forklift. So he worked on a loading dock. So he came home one day with this big pipe, and he cut it to the exact dimensions of our hallway. So we were able to put it over two door frames that faced each other in the hallway.
That's really
cool. You know, the closet and I think their bedroom. So we had this big pipe across the hallway, and I was able to do wide grip chin-ups. So I think those wide grip chin-ups is what developed my lats, because that was like the first body part. That and my biceps, I think, were the two body parts that grew really quick right away when I started training.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. And after listening to your interview with Chris Dickerson, when mm-hmm. when I who was Was it Bill Pearl told him to?
Bill Pearl, who said
just do 40 pull-ups, and he was just like he couldn't even do one.
Right, that was great.
So he did 40 sets of one. Gotta love it.
Right.
But I started
to do the same thing when I started doing chin-ups. I couldn't do 10 reps.
So yeah,
I said, okay, let me do 3 sets of 10, which is 30 reps. So I just counted 30 reps. So even if I got to a set where I could only do 2 reps, I said, okay, that's 2 more. I just kept going until I could do 30 reps. And then eventually I got to a point where I could use a weight. You know, I would hold a 25-pound plate in between my knees, and I would do chin-ups with that, and then I would drop the plate and then keep going. So
yeah.
I think that's what really helped develop my wide lats from the beginning.
Wide lats, and then your biceps probably responded very heavily to the pull-ups too, you know?
I always had a peak on my biceps, even when I was 13 before I started training. So that was just a natural thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, yeah, that's I always had like a little peak on my bicep too. So that's but I model myself a lot after you. So whatever you were doing, I tried to do too. So when we get done here, I'm just gonna do pull-ups, only pull-ups for my back workout today. Which actually I've done 2 weeks in a row, and it's been phenomenal. Like I've great pump. You know, that's one of the best back exercises you can do. And if you can still do them, John, do you still do like a lot of pull-ups today? Yeah, I thought so. I remember watching you on RX Muscle and some of the training videos and stuff, and you were a pull-up machine on some of those videos too.
Yeah, they're not as easy for me as back in the day, but I still try to do them. Yeah.
I wanted to throw something in here, kind of fast forwarding for just a minute. I have to say that, you know, in my 40s now, I'm looking up to guys like you. So VJ, you looked up to John a lot when you were a kid. I'm looking up to guys like John, saying to myself, well, this means I can keep doing it. If John can do this, mm-hmm. I can keep doing it too. What is your training like now compared to, you know, obviously it was probably different. You know, I'm sure you're not doing just all compound lifts in the basement anymore.
Well, actually, it's kind of the same. I mean, probably should change it up, but I'm still training heavy, and I'm still squatting. I can't do deadlifts. That's the only thing. My back is messed up from all those years of heavy training.
Sure.
I got compressed disc in my lower back. So the only thing I can't do is deadlifts, but I could still do barbell rows. I could still do stiff-legged deadlifts. I can still do T-bar rows. I can still squat. So, yeah, I still stick with the basics. I still do mostly barbells and dumbbells. I try to go heavy. I actually have another book coming out pretty soon on Amazon. It's called the MP6 Workout, and I developed this a couple years ago. And it's basically like periodization where I do cycles, and I train 6 weeks to develop strength, which is the power, and then I develop and then I do another 6-week cycle for the mass. So I'm basically doing reps anywhere from like 3 to 5 reps or 6 to 4 reps during the power cycle, and then on the compound movements. And then when I switch over to the mass cycle, I'm using like 6 to 8 reps or, you know, 10 to 12 reps more in the, you know, to develop more muscle mass.
Okay. And recovery wise, what have you found as you've aged? How have you adjusted with that?
Yeah, I only train 4 days a week. Sometimes I'll add a fifth workout in on the weekends, but it all depends on how sore I am or how I'm recovering. But it's basically one body part a week, 4 days a week. So I'll do chest and triceps and calves on Monday, and then I'll do abs and legs on Tuesday, and then I'll kick off Wednesday. Then I'll do shoulders and calves on Thursday, and then back and biceps on Friday. And then if I'm trying to get lean, of course, I'll throw the cardio in, and I might do those on my off days. But it's basically just 4 days a week of training, each body part once a week. I keep the sets moderate, and I still try to train heavy. And still, like I said, use basically the basic exercises with free weights. And then when I do these cycles, they're 6-week cycles. So after the cycle is over with, I'll do what the powerlifters call a deload week, where I'll go in and I'll just lift half the amount of weight I normally do, give my body and my mind total rest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll come back and I'll do another cycle of like mass. So I'll do the power cycle and then the mass cycle.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I kind of got that in there, get a little bit of advice for myself with my achy joints before we had moved on and talked about the book and stuff.
Yeah. And speaking of the book, like we had mentioned at the beginning of the show, John just released his book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1 by John Hansen. So Volume 1, that means there's more come, which is great. I got this book as soon as you posted on Instagram that it was out. I got online and I picked it up right away. But now,
oh, thank you.
But now I'm hoping that I wish I would have gone through you instead, because apparently you were offering autograph ones.
Yeah, well, I ordered like 20 from Amazon.
Okay,
so I'm just waiting to get them, and so I'll sell those when I get them.
Yeah, I should have waited, because I would have liked that one. But I started reading it and I could not put it down. I've got I'm about 50 pages in. And which is essentially all Sergio talk, which is great for me because he's my favorite bodybuilder of all time, most impressive guy ever in the history of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
So when I saw the cover, I was just like, that's what I got to go to first. Luckily, it was first in line, so that's great. But John, tell us about this book. Tell us about why you wanted to start this book and the ideas behind it, and where you're going to go from here.
Yeah, I just wanted to inform, I guess, today's bodybuilders or people that are into the sport about some of the older bodybuilders and some of the great stories. Mm-hmm. Cause there's a lot of great stories, as you're probably finding that out, read the book. Things weren't as organized back then. They were maybe a little bit more political back then. There was more, volatility, I guess, with some of the contests, you know,
sure.
And it was like some crazy stuff would happen. So, and there were some great bodybuilders back then. Of course, like you said, Sergio was, I think, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever. And his battles with Arnold were legendary, even though they only competed against each other, I think, four times. And Mike Mentzer and, you know, Frank Zane, and one of my favorite bodybuilders, Cal Scalak, who won the 1977 Mr. Universe. So I know all these stories, of course, because I read the magazines. And, you know, back when I was young, of course, there was no internet, so we would just get the magazines. That was our only source of information. So we would, it was like me with everybody else, it was all the same. We'd all wait for the magazine to come out, and when it came out, we'd reread it. And so that's why everybody says, wow, you have a great memory. I'm like, well, yeah, I read the magazines like 50 times. Right. That's why I remember everything, you know. It's like embedded in my brain. I can't forget it.
Sure.
I remember where these guys were born and, you know, what year they were born, where they trained, who their trainer was, what gym they trained at, everything, you know. So, so I just wanted to share these stories. So I wrote a bunch of stories. This book was mostly about the 70s. And then volume two will be more about the 80s. And then I was at a lot of the shows. I was at the 77 Mr. Olympia, mm-hmm. 78, 79, and 81. Those were all in Columbus, Ohio, where the Arnold Classic is now.
Yeah.
But back then, Arnold and Jim Lorimer started out promoting the Mr. Olympia. And then they started doing the Arnold in 1989. But before that, in the late 70s, they were doing the Mr. Olympia. And then throughout the 80s. So I was at a lot of those contests, and I got to see Sergio a lot when I was in Chicago, because he lived in Chicago, and he would come to the shows.
Man.
So I saw him back like in 1980, 81, when he was at his peak. You know, he was huge.
Did you ever get to see him train in Chicago, John?
No, I never saw him train, and I never – but I did have him out to my contest, my natural contest, later on. And that was a couple of years before he died. So I got to, that was great that he came out 1 year with, because I knew some of his friends, Bob Guida, who he used to train with at the Duncan YMCA.
Yeah.
Bob would come to my shows every year. So Bob brought him out. And then Bill Sino, who was also another legendary bodybuilder from Chicago, he won the 1964 Most Muscular at the Mr. America contest. And he set the record for the bench press. He was a real strong power lifter as well as a bodybuilder.
Mm-hmm.
So they all came out, and then I got to have Sergio come out also.
Man,
so that was great.
That's cool.
But yeah, seeing Sergio in person when I was young was amazing. I mean,
wow.
You know, it's different now, of course. Guys are taking GH, they're taking insulin, they're shooting stuff in their biceps. But back then, there was none of that. It was just food, training, and steroids, you know, just the normal steroids. And Sergio had like 21-inch arms, and he had a 28-inch waist.
Mm-hmm.
So to see that in person was just unbelievable. It was just amazing to see him. And a lot of people have said the same thing. You know, even Peter McGuff, if you ask him, all the bodybuilders he's seen, I think the most person he was most blown away by was Sergio Oliva when he saw him in the 1971 Mr. Universe.
Jeez. Man, I wish I could travel back in time. That's a period that I would have loved to have seen him in. Just to get, because, you know, we know what bodybuilders look like today, and we know what the genetic capabilities are now, you know, and stuff. But, man, to be able to see something as raw and pure as just 100% talent just seething out of him, that's a rarity I don't know that we'll ever see again, you know?
And he was such a character, too. He would, the clothes he would wear, you know, he was Cuban.
Yeah.
So he would wear these really flashy clothes. Like, I remember one year he came, he had the high-waisted white pants, bell-bottom pants with the white shoes.
Oh,
and then he had, like, a red shirt that was buttoned down to his, like, his sternum, you know. And then he had all this gold. He had this huge gold medallion plus all these other gold necklaces. He had bracelets, gold bracelets, shaved head, you know. And it was so funny. I was in this contest. It was the 1980 Central USA, and I was in the teenage division. So back then, they just had bodybuilding. That's all they had. I don't even think women's bodybuilding started yet, so it was just bodybuilding. So they would start off with teen bodybuilding, then go to, like, junior bodybuilding, maybe novice. I think they had couples. No, they didn't have couples because they didn't have women back then. So they just had, and then they would have the open. So we would always go up first, the teenagers. And back then there was probably 30 teenagers in a contest, at least 30 to 50 teenagers.
That's amazing. That's so crazy.
Yeah. Jeez. So Sergio comes to the contest and it's completely packed. It's sold out. And he had this, Cadillac Eldorado, I think it was crazy. This crazy tripped out Cadillac. So he drove it, and there was no parking. So he drove up on the lawn in front of the pool. He just parked his car on the lawn. So he comes walking in, and he comes walking into the auditorium, and I'm backstage. I'm off on the sidelines watching the other guys pose, the teenagers pose. You know, I'm waiting for my chance to go on stage. So Sergio comes in the auditorium door, and he comes walking down the aisle. And the whole audience stops what they're doing, and they all look at him. Mm. And they all start, they go, "Hey, Sergio, Sergio, Sergio's here." So everybody starts clapping. And he starts walking down the aisle, and he just waves his hand like he's a king, you know. And he walks all the way down to the front of the stage, and he comes up on the stage, and he comes backstage with us, you know. And we're standing there, and he comes up to us, and he goes, "Hey, how are the big guys doing? How are the big guys doing?" Because he has this real high voice.
Yeah.
You so sound the like poor guy who was on stage posing, nobody was even looking at him.
You know, oh, poor kid.
Posing. And everybody just totally ignored him. But
man.
It was amazing that he was so powerful, you know. That,
yeah.
I mean, can you imagine anybody walking into a contest today and the whole audience turning around? I mean, that would never happen.
No, that's crazy, man. Wow, that's he was essentially like Arnold. I mean, you know, he had that kind of that kind of charisma and lure about him, you know?
He did, he did. And he was very, you know, he was charismatic. He was had a lot of he was very arrogant, sort of like Arnold was. So that's why when the two of them met, it was a real battle because they were both genetically freaks, you know, and they were both very cocky and very, you just think Arnold was a little bit smarter, you know, than Sergio was. And that's how he was able to beat him.
Man, these are great. These are great stories. So that is, I mean, for anyone who's listening and knows their history pretty well, you need to get this book. And if you're a fan of Sergio Oliva, especially, you got to get this book because clearly by reading it, John is definitely a fan of Sergio Oliva. But he has every right to be, every reason to be, because the piece that you wrote about him and you know, just how magnificent of a bodybuilder he was, it's just it extends like goosebumps down my spine, man. Because you know, it's like it's a time that I wish I would have seen in person. I can only ever go back and look at these pictures, and I've been looking at these same pictures since I was fucking 8 years old. You know what I mean? It's like I wish there was something more, but you know, it is what it is. It's not there was no internet or anything. So, but. You know.
Yeah, it's amazing how those physiques are still so highly regarded. You know, even when young kids come into the sport and they don't know anything about Sergio or any of those guys that were around back then, and they see those bodies, they're like, wow, this guy. And that's how it was with us when we were young.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we used to look at those guys, and they look like superheroes. And I said, you know, that's why I think everybody asks me, why is the teenage dropped off so much? And I think that's why it was, because when we were young and we saw those bodies, you know, we saw bodybuilders like Arnold and Sergio and Mike Mentzer and Frank Zane and Robbie Robinson. Everybody wanted to look like that. So that's what motivated us to all go to the gym. And then the next thing you know, there's 50 kids in a teenage show or 60 kids in a teenage show. Now you're lucky if you see one or two.
Right.
So I think that says something about what the bodybuilders look like today compared to what they look like then. Because back then, everybody wanted to look like that. And now apparently nobody wants to look like the guys today, or not many, because we don't have any teenagers left. You know, so we're not inspiring the young kids today to compete, where back then, you know, it was huge. The teenage shows were huge back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, man. It's definitely taken a turn for, I don't know, it's not taking a turn for worse. It's just that there's so many other venues of competing for these teenagers now, and most of them are just jumping right into that men's physique because it's the easier thing to do, right? So it's a good jumping in point, and that's probably another reason why, you know, there's not. I mean, these kids all have Instagram and stuff, and you know, they can get on there and look at all their heroes daily, right? But when we were kids, we had to wait for these magazines to come out or call Gold's Gym in Venice Beach, California to find out what, you know, who won what or whatever it was, you know? So it's like that's another thing too. I don't know how that conflicts, but it's just a lot different, you know. John, you said you were, now, Volume 1 covers, you know, Sergio. It covers the whole thing between him and Arnold. Covers Zane, his reign, right? And you kind of make your way all the way up to right around 1980. Is that right? In this book?
Yeah. The last two chapters are about the 1980 Olympia. Mm-hmm. So that sort of ended the decade or started the decade for the 1980s. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, and like you had said, you tell us a little bit about your recounting of some of these of your best Olympia memory. Cause it sounds like you had gone to you had gone to like four of them, right?
Yeah. I was really lucky because, the year I started bodybuilding, 1977, I asked my dad, I said, do you think we could go see the Mr. Olympia this year? And, he said, yeah. So it was in Columbus, Ohio, and we lived in Chicago. So I think it was like a 7-hour drive. So he took the whole family. We packed the whole family in the van, me, my mom, dad, my brother, and my sister. And we got a hotel room for the weekend. And I don't know what the tickets were, probably $15 back then. And we ordered them sort of late, and we had to sit in the balcony. So me and my brother went into the pre-judging, and it was just packed, you know, packed with people. It was just amazing. The atmosphere and the contest was just incredible. And I'll never forget, I walked in, and it was like the theater was dark, and I walked in, it was totally packed, and we were all waiting for the prejudging to start. And this big guy just sat down on one of the seats. He like sort of dropped into the seat on the aisle, and the whole chair came off this hinge. It like broke. I was like, wow, I'm in the right place, you know. This is amazing. So I got to see Muhammad McAway win the Mr. International, and beat Roy Callender, and then the Mr. Olympia came out, and Frank Zane was in it, and Robbie Robinson and Boyer Coe and Ed Corney got two or three standing ovations at night when he did his posing routine, because that was the year Pumping Iron came out, and everybody knew that Corney was the master poser, you know, and he was in great shape that year. He got third, and when he posed, it was like, you know, he just did that crazy, that chilling. It was like, it was so magnetic, the way he posed. It was so, he had it in the palm of his hand, and the crowd went nuts. Oh, and another interesting thing that was happening that year in 77 was they had these huge floodlights on the side of the stage of the Veterans Memorial Auditorium. So every time ABC television was there for Wide World of Sports, and every time they wanted to film the audience, they would put on these floodlights, and they put the cameras on the audience. And everybody started booing. They're like, turn the lights off, turn the lights off, you know. So Arnold came to the microphone, and Arnold's unbelievable. I mean, this guy, I knew he was going to go into politics because he totally turned it around. He's like, hey, I hear you guys. I understand what you're saying. But he goes, ABC is here, and they're filming you, and everybody starts booing. Boo!
Oh,
you know, turn them off.
Wow.
So then he goes, they're going to be on you. So he goes, this is going to be on TV. So he goes, we want to show everybody that bodybuilding is the greatest sport. So whenever those lights come on, he goes, I need you guys to scream as loud as possible to show everybody that this is the best sport ever. So that totally changed everybody's attitude.
Yeah.
Every time those lights came on, now the place was going nuts. They were standing up, they were screaming. It was like a Beatles concert, you know. It's crazy.
Wow, that's so amazing. It's so funny how different it is now. It's like, now it's like, guys are out, now at the Olympia, guys have to like put their hand to their ear, you know, to get a sound out of the crowd,
that.
Man.
They never,
it's
like, did that.
That was unheard of back then, that you could do it with a posing routine. If you couldn't, then, you know, what were you doing? Man,
yeah,
what a time. What a great time. John, I wanted to ask you, there was something about the book that I wanted to ask you about. Now it's kind of getting away from me. What else did you want to kind of talk about the book that you want to send the message out to?
I just wanted to share those stories, you know, and so people would know about those individuals, because like I said, there was some, I have this story about Cal Scalak. And Cal, I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Oh, of course. Of course, I followed him. Yep.
Oh, you have? Okay. He beat Mike Mentzer at the 1977 Mr. Universe. Yep. And I remember when I was reading Muscle Builder, every month there was like, Mike Mentzer's going into Mr. Universe. Mike Mentzer, you know, it's like they're already predicting he was going to win, like months, 6 months in advance, you know. And Cal was this kind of cocky bodybuilder. He was undefeated. He entered 5 contests in his career. He won Mr. Delaware, Mr. California, Mr. America, Mr. USA, and I think that was it. Yeah, and then Mr. Universe, and he won Mr. Then he ended up winning Mr. Universe, and he beat Mike Mentzer by 1 point. So it was crazy because, you know, he just totally was the underdog, and he defeated him. And then he had a big falling out with Joe Weider because Joe Weider wasn't paying him for his photographs, because every month he would have an article about Cal, how Cal trains his shoulders, how Cal trains his back, how Cal trains his chest. So it was like every month after he won the Mr. Universe, Weider was featuring him in the magazine. And then he demanded payment from Weider, and Weider wouldn't pay him. So he went into Weider's offices, and he grabbed the photos out of his office. And he was going to take them, and Weider went nuts. And Weider tried to tackle him. And I talked to Jerry Crane, who was working there at the time. And he goes, it was like he hit an elevator. It was like he hit a brick wall. You know, he didn't even move. And he grabbed it, and then they ended up going to court, and he sued him.
Jeez.
So after this, he decides to create a bodybuilders union. He goes, all us bodybuilders need to get together to stand up against the IFBB. So he created this bodybuilders union, and Arnold was going to be behind him. Arnold was going to be like the president of the union. And then they had this meeting at a hotel, and Arnold didn't show up. So, you know, Cal was sort of left by himself to fend for himself and try to, you know, build this union against Ben Weider. And then Arnold shows up late. And then he sees that Ben Weider sort of takes control of the meeting. And then Arnold said, well, I got to leave. And he just excused himself, and he never really stood up for the union. And then the union sort of fell apart. And then after that, Cal went into the 1978 Mr. Olympia, and he figures he's going to get screwed. But he goes in looking great, and he ends up taking 5th place. And after he took 5th place, he did the crucifix pose where he put his arms out.
Yeah.
And he acted like he got crucified like Jesus.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy stuff, too.
Now, you were at the 78 Olympia. Is that right?
Yeah, I got to see that.
How did he look? You know, we always hear about the crucifix pose, you know, he's being crucified, but how did he actually look at the show?
He looked unbelievable. His legs were out of proportion to his upper body. That was the only weak point. He never had legs to match his upper body was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He had huge arms, huge chest, and the crowd loved him. The crowd loved him more than anybody. And when he came out to pose, they were going crazy. You know, they were all standing up and everything every time he had his most muscular poses. So the crowd loved him, and he was in great condition. He wasn't smooth at all. He was ripped. Plus, he was huge. But he just didn't have the proportions, so I could understand why he didn't win. And Zane looked amazing that year, and Robbie looked fantastic. So I think Callender was 3rd, and Boyer was 4th. So I can understand why he didn't place high, just because of the imbalance, especially his calves were weak.
See, John, this is kind of like off topic, but these are classic times that you describe in this book, and very, very magical era. But how do you feel currently about, you know, classic physique?
You know, well, I think classic's great. I think it's going to bring back sort of what bodybuilding was, because if you look at the competitions back then, there were no different divisions. There was just bodybuilding and the judges were, they were sophisticated enough, I guess, to look at a physique and see all the different aspects of a physique. They could see a guy who was big, but he had good symmetry, and he had the definition, and he had the shape. And all of that was taken into account when they were judging physique. So that's why you could see a guy like Muhammad McAway beating someone like Bertel Fox. You know, Bertel Fox was huge. But McAway was 5'2", 150, 160 pounds, and he would beat these guys. He would win pro shows, you know, because he had the symmetry, he had the definition, and he had it all. And same thing with Samir Badut. I think Samir Badut was only 187 pounds or something when he won Mr. Olympia. But he had all those aspects. And then I think we sort of lost that with the judging, where they just started judging more size, and the guys started getting bigger and bigger, and then if you look at a lot of the shows today, and I complain about this all the time, a lot of the local shows, I think you're getting judges that really don't have the experience and they don't have the knowledge on how to judge a physique. So they're looking at these guys, and they just go for hardness. Whoever's got ripped glutes wins. So if a guy's missing body parts and he doesn't have good symmetry and he's got the bloated stomach, it's okay as long as he's got ripped glutes. And they're missing all these other aspects of bodybuilding. So it's hard to turn the clock back. You know, we can't make the bodybuilders get smaller, not if they've been this big. It would just wouldn't work. So I think by bringing in this other division, classic physique, now, and then they're limiting their weight so they can't get too big, and they're covering up their glutes, so they're not going to judge the ripped glutes, which is good. So now they're just judging all their aspects of their physique. They're going to look at the symmetry. They're going to look at the small waist, the vacuum, you know, and they're going to start develop all these other aspects of what's important in a bodybuilder's physique. So, yeah, I think this division has a lot of potential. And I think, you know, when you saw the natural or the Classic Physique Olympia last year, you had all these new young guys coming up, like Breon Ansley.
And, yeah, yeah.
Chris
Bumstead.
The guy who's in second. Bumstead, yeah. So you got these great, and you're going to see more and more of that. I think this may, you know, cause a resurgence in the interest in bodybuilding and classic physique.
Yeah,
and you're going to get a lot of these young guys who want to look like those guys. And that's what it takes. You have to have the guys at the top. They have to be someone that everybody wants to look like.
Something that
you can get that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of...
I think you're going to get a lot of young guys into it.
Well, that's kind of the draw of the classic physiques back in the 70s and the 60s. It was something that was still generally within you know, it was attainable. You know what I mean? It was somewhat attainable. It's like you could.
Absolutely. That's so true.
Yeah. Right. And the classic physique is no different. You know, it's somewhat attainable to reach that level of muscularity. You don't have to be 300 pounds in the fucking off season in order to get down to, you know, a beautiful, nice structure physique at 200 pounds or less, you know? And I think I'm totally with you. I actually prefer at the Olympia this year, I preferred all the guys in the classic physique over the guys in the open. And it was just what my eyes wanted. You know what I mean? It was just like, I kept scrolling back through those pictures and not really the guys in the open. You know, it's like maybe that comes back to the fact that
happen more and more.
Yeah. It's just, you know, they're freaks, and that's what Dorian kind of led bodybuilding towards. And that's fine. That's great. It's cool. Right. We still are going to follow. It's cool as hell to see, right? That kind of muscle. But realistically and personally, you know, it's like, what do I really want to look like, though? And that always points towards classic physique, you know? So,
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And a lot of these bodybuilders feel the same. I talked to Mike Ashley. I talked to Sean Ray. I think Roy Callender said the same thing. They all like that look, you know? So I think this is the division that's going to take off. And like I mentioned, I think I mentioned this to Sean Ray when I interviewed him. I said, if they can learn how to pose like they did back then, like Sean Ray did, or like Lee Labrada, and if they can start bringing in those kind of posing routines, that'll bring back the artistic aspect of bodybuilding again, too. So
I hope that happens.
I hope they really have these inspiring routines, not just good routines, not just graceful routines with good transitions, but you also have the right kind of music, and you have to make it inspiring. You should watch a posing routine and have goosebumps, you know, like Sean Ray did at the 87 Nationals, or Barry DeMay did at the 88 Olympia, you know, or Lee Haney did at the 84 Olympia. When he came out and posed Excalibur, it was like, wow, that was just groundbreaking. I mean, here we are, what, 30-something years later, and I'm still talking about it. That's how important that posing routine was. I mean, if you do a good posing routine, it'll last the test of time, and that's why I don't understand, especially these pros at the Olympia, why are they not spending more time? Can you imagine, like, if Rami came out and posed some, like, really powerful music and really had the transitions and everything? God, that would be amazing, you know? But they just don't do it.
No, they don't. I remember, I think Frank Zane's routine, I think it was from the 84 Olympia. He was just a little bit past his prime, but his posing routine, he posed to a song by Pink Floyd. It was One of These Days by Pink Floyd. And that is that is my all-time favorite posing routine ever. And I watched that video.
That was 1980. Yeah.
Was it 80? Oh, wow, man. It was I've watched that video over and over and over again. Yeah, that's my favorite routine of all time. And that, like you said, it gives you chills, man. It's something that you wish you could do, you know?
Right. That's what's inspiring. That's what makes you want to go to the gym and look like that. And that's what makes you want to compete.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
You know, one of your guests, John, I can't remember what his name was. He was one of the judges. He said that for him, bodybuilding kind of took that turn back at the time that we had what's his name? Dorian.
Roger Schwab, maybe? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was Roger Schwab. And he said that when Dorian, you know, came out, when he hit the scene, that's where the shift was. That's where the transition is. And I could totally see that. Would you agree, or would you say there's another point in your mind where you feel like bodybuilding really started taking that turn to where we are today?
No, I agree with that too. I think it was when Dorian, especially in 93 mm-hmm. or 94, when he was getting really, really big. And then everybody was following him saying, okay, if I want to do good in the sport, I got to get up to 300 pounds in the off season and I got to be huge. And I think that's when GH was coming in. I think that's when the guys really got big, you know, when that made that turn. If you look at the 80s, I think the 80s was the last time where the guys looked more human and they looked more attainable, like you said. And I think that was the last era. And after Haney left and after the 80s ended and then Dorian took over, I think that's when the new guys came in. I think they just got super huge and it was almost unattainable, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's where it turned the corner.
How do you feel about the 212? I mean, I think a lot of people say that it's basically the open, but just for short guys. At the same time, though, there are some really, you know, strong constraints there. And I do see some guys that have some really nice looks.
Yeah. I mean, and most of them come in great condition.
Yeah.
So it's a great division. But yeah, I sort of agree with what you said. I think it's most like the open, just shorter. And then, you know, when I did an interview with Santiago Aragon, who I know you guys have had on your show. And when I had that FloridaPhysique.com, I did an interview with him after he won. Well, I think it was when he was changing over to Classic Physique.
Mm-hmm.
He said when he started competing in 212, they wanted him to gain 30 pounds. He was
in
the first 212 division or 212 contest. I think he got like 7th or 8th place.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he looked great, but they wanted him to be at the top of the limit. You know, so he was being forced to gain 30 pounds. And he said if he did that, he would totally lose his line.
Right, absolutely.
That's when he switched over to Classic Physique, yeah. So you have to, like, I think Lee Labrada used to say this all the time, and even Arnold used to say it, and I know Frank Zane said it, and Bob Paris, you have to build your body to whatever looks good for you. It's not just about attaining a certain size or a certain weight. You have to do it within the guidelines of your structure, and you also always have to remember what looks good as far as symmetry goes. You should never develop more mass than your body can handle where you ruin the symmetry. I mean, I remember reading an article. I have an old magazine where Arnold talks about he only competes up to like 235. And he goes, I could be bigger than that. But he goes, if I did, it would ruin my symmetry and my shape. His waist would get bigger. He wouldn't look as good in like the front double bicep.
Yeah.
A lot of the aesthetic poses. Now, here's the biggest guy around at that time. He's the king. Not only the king of bodybuilding, but he's also probably the biggest bodybuilder around back then, him and Lou Ferrigno. And he's saying that he keeps his weight down because he doesn't want to lose his symmetry. I mean, that's very telling. You know, that tells you that back then it was all about aesthetics. It was about building the most perfectly developed physique. Not building the biggest physique, but building the most perfectly developed physique. So Lee Labrada always kept that in mind. I remember Bob Paris was being criticized because they said, you could be Mr. Olympia, Bob. You just got to get bigger. And he goes, no, I don't want to do that. He goes, I have an idea in my mind of what I want my body to look like, and I'm not going to go past that. And they were putting, I think, more pressure on him to take more stuff and to get freakier and get bigger. And he goes, no, that's not to me. That's not what bodybuilding is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he had the perfect vision in his mind. And Frank Zane, for all his, you know, to his credit, he totally stood up against the mass monsters, and he said, you know, I'm going to develop my physique the way I want it to look. And it paid off for him. I don't know if it would pay. It probably wouldn't pay off today with that attitude. You have to be big. But back then it did. And he was bigger when he was younger. He competed bigger and smoother. But he knew that didn't fit his body. So then he just started creating his body like an artist. He started sculpting it. He started taking pictures of himself, realized where he needed to improve. And I remember when I saw, there was a picture on Iron Man magazine of the 1977 Mr. Olympia, the first one he won, and it was a rear double bicep pose, and they had it on the back cover. This is when Perry Rader owned the Iron Man magazine back then. They would have a front cover and a back cover, a big picture, and he was doing a rear double bicep, and there was so much detail in his back, and I'm like, oh my God, I'd never seen that before. But that's what he was training for. He was training for detail, aesthetic, shape, and not just more and more size or more and more weight. He knew exactly where he needed to be in order to have the most perfect physique for Frank Zane. And that's what he did. And it paid off for him.
I love that. That's cool.
Yeah.
We're running short on time here, but VJ had some trivia he wanted to bring up here. Let me get that rolling, Vij, so that we can close the show.
Yeah, before you go, John, I had to just give you a quiz. I mean, I can't not. I got, you know what I mean? Got John Hansen on. You got to quiz the guy, you know? So let's you actually you destroyed one of my questions when you were talking about Cal Scalak. So I was right. I was just scouring the internet just now trying to find another question. It's all right. I'm pretty quick with that. So so Danny Padilla, all right? We're going to start off with a relatively easy one. Danny Padilla, obviously super dejected after the 1981 Mr. Olympia, continued to, you know, compete, you know, well into even the 2000s sporadically, correct? He never really did kind of gain his footing back again until right around 1990. In 1990, he actually, you know, he did all the Grand Prix shows, and he did a couple of more pro shows. He placed pretty well considering the era he was in. What was out of the, let's see, well, it's probably, he did probably maybe 8 shows in 1990. You know, that breaks his hiatus pretty well. What was his highest placing that year, and which show?
Probably when he took second to Eddie Robinson at the Niagara Falls show.
That's it.
Wow.
You're gonna get all these right, but this is fun for me.
see, here's the thing. There's different kinds of bodybuilding nerds, and bodybuilding nerd historian VJ falls right in that line. And of course, John, you're like the king of bodybuilding nerd historian stuff. Yeah. So we can't not do this.
No, you got to prove yourself here too. Let's go 1975. All right, I'm talking NABBA, Mr. Universe here. Who won the 1975 NABBA Mr. Universe?
Is it Boyer Co?
Mm-mm. Is that your final answer?
No.
This is.
Can you get?
I will say that Steve Michalik, it was a heavy favorite to win this show.
Okay. 75.
Yeah.
I know Tony. Tony Emmett won it in 77. I think Serge Dubre won it in 76. I can't remember who won it in 70. I thought it was Boyer Co. I guess I'm wrong.
Well, oh shit. I think you, I mean, you, according to the internet.
Maybe John's right. Maybe you're wrong.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe because I went to that site, you know, musclememory.com. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But yeah, 1975 NABBA Universe was actually won by the short man, Ian Lawrence.
Oh, Ian Lawrence, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had a good physique.
Yeah.
He won the amateur, right?
Yeah, this is the amateur, and he beat Steve Michalik, who was the heavy favorite that year.
Who won the pro that year?
In 75? Waller.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Ken Waller, I believe.
Ken Waller won the... No, it couldn't be, because Ken Waller was in the universe that year.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that what you asked? Who won the universe? The pro universe?
No, who won the... Yeah, who won the NABBA Pro Universe?
Oh, the NABBA Pro Universe. Oh, shit.
Because they have an amateur and a pro.
Yeah,
so Ian Lawrence won the amateur.
Yeah, because the 75 IFBB Mr. Universe, that was in Pretoria, right? That was
Ken
Waller.
Yeah, that was Ken Waller, yeah. He beat Robbie and Will Sylvester.
Yeah. Next question here. Eduardo Kowak, how many NABBA wins did he have? His NABBA Universe wins.
I'll say 4.
Five. 5 is the answer.
That's
five.
A really tough question.
Yeah,
that's a tough one.
Well, Eduardo Kowak is pretty. He's pretty. Yeah, he won 4 in a row, and then he took a year off. I think he came back and won again.
Yeah, he was sneaky.
Now
I just looked up the 75 Universe NABBA Pro. It was Boyer Co.
There you go. All right. So, but the NABBA Universe, the amateur was Ian Lawrence.
Right.
Yeah.
Ian Lawrence.
Wait,
right.
I don't think you specified though, Vij. So I'm going to give that one to John.
Yeah. Well, he was right. I told you he was going to be right. He's always going to be right. You know, just on a side note, John, what did you think of Eduardo Kowak placing 13th in his first Mr. Olympia attempt? That was an 80, I believe. Wasn't it?
Yeah, that guy always had, I think it was after 80.
It was, yeah. It was
probably 86, maybe 86.
86, it was 86. 86, yeah, it was 86.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he had a freaky physique, and he was never given, I think, what he deserved in the IFBB for some reason. I don't know if they said he wasn't ripped enough or whatever, but mm-hmm. He was almost ahead of his time, I thought.
I thought so, too. Just so complete, just Herculean everywhere.
Huge legs. Huge,
everything.
Huge arms.
He just, I just figured that, you know, he was such a star in the NABBA and the WABBA and WBBG, whatever. I just figured that the IFBB didn't like that fact, you know, and so they placed him low.
I think so, too.
Yeah. So
and that's happened to quite a few guys, and a lot of them have gone back to NABBA and they're like, fuck the IFBB. I'm not going to get a fair shake here,
Next question here, and we're almost done here. John, you can stop sweating here. The first Mr. Universe amateur, who was it and what year?
Was it John Grimmick?
It was John Grimmick.
Wow.
What year, though?
Year?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. I think Steve Reeves won in 50. I'm going to say, maybe 47, 48.
48, that is correct.
Wow.
48, okay. Yep. Yeah, I thought he won 2 years before Steve Reeves, yeah.
I don't know how you guys have that much room in your head for this information. I mean, Veej knows a bunch of this stuff, but you've proven now. I mean, it amazes me. It just flat out amazes me.
See, now you see why I had to quiz him. We got just two more questions left here, John, all right?
Okay.
Sergio Oliva, all right? Which WBBG and WADA show did he enter and not win?
Wow, I didn't know he lost one.
That's the answer, actually. That's the right answer. You gave the right answer.
Yeah. It was a trick question, huh?
He didn't lose any show in those federations. He walked in and stormed them is what happened.
Yeah. Whether he was in shape or not, he always won.
Yeah. last question here, John, and we'll let you go. Albert Beckles, or Beckles.
Yeah.
Calman Skilak, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Robbie Robinson, Boyer Coe, and John Hansen. Who has the best bicep peaks?
Albert Beckles.
That's another correct answer, John. You just won.
Okay, his biceps were freaky. Yeah. They're unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I would have I've chosen too. But yours are fucking freaky as hell too, man. So you were right up there.
Yeah,
at least for in my mind, you know.
John, that was a good list.
Yeah, I thought I didn't want to try to be too harsh on you, but I figured you're gonna know the answer to anything I was gonna ask. So. John, where can people find you? Where can people find you? Where can they get your book? What else is going on? Plug away.
It's on Amazon.com, and like I said, my other book, The MP6 Workout, if you're interested in that, that'll also be on Amazon probably sometime this month, probably toward the end of the month. And I hope you guys listen to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast every week. That's on iTunes. And if you go to the BodybuildingLegendsShow.com, you can see all my interviews and all my podcasts are all on there, and any articles I write also are also on there. So, yeah, just go to Amazon.com to get the book, though, and selling pretty good so far. It's only been on a couple of days, so I appreciate you guys having me on the show to plug it.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you being here. It's this has been a treat for me to just kind of sit back and hear you guys go back and forth. And you know, John, I think, like I said, you know, there's different kinds of bodybuilding nerds out there. One of them is definitely the historian type. And Veej, I think he's got you beat. I got to say it, man. He's got you beat.
I was never competing with him to begin with.
All right, John.
I've never been called a nerd before, but I'll take it.
Thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Guys, for Advices Radio, I'm with Veej Puri and John Hansen.
See you guys.